Welcome back to the Ryan Kelly Morning After. Now, back to Tim, Jim, and Doug, live from the Gateway Buick GMC Studios on the all-new 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.
Fan KFNS, and the Cardinals are taking the field. Ladies and gentlemen, pot the music down as the Plowhawk is ready.
Dad, how you doing, sir?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm Plowboy. Great to meet you. You look like being in the best shape of your life. What's your favorite cut of fry? You like the crinkle, waffle, or straight American style?
A lot of good French fries. I'm more of a waffle fry kind of guy.
I like the waffle. And do you consider a hot dog a sandwich?
Nope.
What's your favorite sandwich to make, sir?
I like the grilled cheese.
Like a grilled cheese? You like that bacon on that?
Is Plowboy going to walk on the field?
Cheese, just a grilled cheese.
And is a hot dog a sandwich?
Nope, it's a hot dog.
Oh, sorry about that, Jed.
Dude, he just ran Jed Jerko into the fence.
Don't mess with Broxton.
What's your favorite cut of fry? Waffle or regular or crinkle cut?
Well, waffle.
Waffle fry, good
answer.
Favorite waffle?
Yes.
He has shaded me.
Say the name of the player.
Yeah, we don't know who this is.
Hey, Colton, nice boombox.
What in
gotta love
hell?
Colton Wong there.
This might be the end.
Boxers, briefs, commando. What do you got?
Briefs.
Perfect. Favorite cut of fry, Marco?
I thought we were going to ask that.
What?
Favorite cut of fry? Waffle? Waka? Favorite cut of fry?
Waka.
Sweet potato fry. Pancakes or French toast, sir?
French toast.
French toast. Johnny, great to see you. Look like the best shape of your life. Great to meet you, man.
Perfect. Great stuff with Johnny Perrault.
Favorite cut of fry, Garcia?
Garcia, last name basis.
That's an I don't know. Weaver, favorite cut of fry?
This could be the end.
This is the end. Move up!
Right, if you didn't
move
hear that,
up!
Weaver, like,
move
the
up!
French
move up!
Fry.
Please move up before we're thrown off the campus.
French toast, pancakes, waffles. What do you got?
Pancake.
Pancakes? Perfect.
Say the name
What's
of the player.
What's your favorite type of sandwich to make in the off season?
Pizza.
Pizza? Perfect.
Did he say pizza?
Lance, do you consider a...
Yeah, over there.
Lance apparently doesn't like the media.
He doesn't like
but
you.
But my guess would be he thinks the hot dog's a sandwich. Bueno, got a really important hard-hitting question. Is a hot dog a sandwich? That look said yes by Wainwright. Is a hot dog a sandwich, Gritch?
See.
And a favorite cut of fry?
Thin cut.
Thin cut for Gritch.
Interesting answer.
That's not a very popular...
Max Carpenter
wants nothing to do with
running. Hey, Matt, great to see you.
Boy, he hates that.
Boy, he hates
Great
it.
To see you, Yachty.
Ooh, speaking of hating it.
Anything else?
Rosie, do you got French toast, pancakes, or waffles?
Probably pancakes.
He's nice.
Favorite cut of fry?
Regular.
Regular, perfect. Let's see, I think that might wrap it up. We'll try to, Nick, let's walk back here. Tim, I don't know if I'm talking over you. I can't hear you, so I apologize in advance if you're trying to spit a hot take right now.
All right, we'll take it, Plowsy. We got it. All right, so.
So he was essentially on the Cardinal practice field. I could barely see him, and I could not observe even who he was talking to with the exception of a handful of players. Nor was he identifying said players, and I thought we limited the boxer brief thing, but yet.
I think he panicked. I think he was at it. I've been there. Where you run out of questions and you go, talk about the game.
So the Plow Panther, he's still asking guys questions even though we don't have his mic on, which is probably fine. You want to pot him up?
Let's pot him up.
St. Louis.
Oh, there he is.
I've never had it, so I'd like to try it.
And do you consider a hot dog a sandwich?
No.
Okay, thank you, Dak. Good luck.
Was that Dexter Fowler?
Dexter Fowler.
He's definitely hitting 20 and stealing 30 for sure.
Wow.
Back to you, Timmy.
Thank you. That's great analysis.
He doesn't know that we didn't have most of that. That's our...
We don't have to tell him that, though.
Yeah. That's our... this is Rick Ankiel.
Rick Ankiel is sitting down with us.
And he heard all that, and that's our producer. And how do you describe him? Just because Rick is looking at what's going on, and he's
You have to just be
confused.
Disappointed in the whole operation.
Of watching what just happened? I've never seen the question of the day, so it was actually kind of interesting. I
to see it from this side?
Yeah, exactly.
We could barely see you. You were basically over at the Marlins camp.
Plowsy, real quick.
Introduce yourself to Rick Ankiel.
Yeah.
Good to see you, Plowboy. Where's that come from exactly?
Plowsy, just
he's from Peoria, and he worked on a farm.
Just a couple things to tighten up. You were brilliant, as usual. but you got to identify the player.
That's right. That's okay. A very important thing.
And we also, you were kind of playing to the camera a little bit more than the live broadcast. You got to balance that too.
I agree, and I apologize. I know it's the first day, but they
train
go
to
out
win.
I wasn't ready for them to go out the opposite way. Usually, they come in this way. So, you know, kind of quick hitters, and Dexter was great. I can't wait to talk to him.
Yeah, just
more.
So you know, we only got the last question because we had cut you off by then.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but we did hear it.
It seemed like Lance Lynn.
We didn't hear that one.
Yeah, we cut maybe 3 seconds of it. It seemed like Lance Lynn said to you, I don't think you're supposed to be over here.
And he looked pretty serious, but I'm not going to take his advice, so we're going to do that every day. And if he happened to kick me out, well, then so be it. We'll cross that bridge.
I have a feeling we might cross that bridge, actually. The Plowhawk out on there with the question of the day. Some wonderful questions. As we broadcast live here on the Ryan Kelly Morning After from Jupiter, Florida. Cardinal spring training coverage, our 12th year at the picnic table, and it is our pleasure to welcome to the picnic table, ladies and gentlemen, Rick Ankiel. Hello, Rick. Listen to this crowd. I've never heard anything like it.
Sorry you had to sit through that,
Thanks
Rick.
For having me.
I know. I honestly thought you might just get up and leave while that was going on.
It's a terrible
It would have been ideal if you could have sat down just maybe a couple minutes later so you would have never had to witness the whole thing.
I would have took the mic and started asking questions.
You want to go out there.
What time is your tea time today?
Yeah, I would like to play. Rick is sitting down with us here, and it's always great to have him on the radio show. But even better this year because you have your book coming out on April 18th, correct?
Yes.
April 18th. I have been hoping that you would do something like this, and now it is complete, and it's going to be hitting bookstores on April 18th. How proud are you of the work that you put in to make this whole thing possible?
Very proud. It took a long time. You know, it's over 3 years. You know, just going back and forth with the writer, but now we're finally at the finish line here with the finished product. And as you said, April 18th will be the release date, and should be fun.
With everything that you've been through growing up, you know, under some circumstances that were tough to make it to the big leagues, to have what happened with your pitching, and then totally reinventing yourself after that, I would think that that's the kind of story that can inspire people that. It's never really over until you say it's over. Is that why you wrote that?
Yeah. You know, I think the overall lesson from the book is about just getting back up. You know, you're going to get knocked down. Everybody gets knocked down in every walk of life, right? You know, life is beautiful, and then it's messy, and then it's beautiful again. I mean, that's just human. That's human life. So, you know, there's definitely those lessons in there when you look at my story. You know, another reason I chose to write it is – you know, my little boys are 4 and 6 now, and they're getting to the age, I think, where they're going to start asking. And it's their story, too. So, you know, now I got it all out there. A lot of things I didn't talk about when I was going through it, you know, what I was going through mentally and what it was like all the time. And you got to give the writer just a pat on the back. He did a phenomenal job of really putting you inside of my brain and helping you understand what I was going through in a lot of those moments.
You know, having talked to folks who have written books about some difficult moments, they say it's tough because part of you – always recognizes what you went through, but you don't really revisit it a lot. And to open up and to explain where you were mentally and how difficult – was that a difficult process for you?
Oh, yeah. Really, really tough. And it's funny, you know, I'm not really somebody who reflects a lot. I'm always looking forward, trying to, you know, who am I going to be today and who can I be tomorrow and how can I better myself in those ways. And I think, you know, for me going through – a lot of that was so traumatic that I didn't want to go back. And so you're right. I never really went back and revisited those memories. And I remember the first time we sat down and pulled up the pitch and the playoffs from the, you know, 2000 and watched it. And I was like, wow, I can't believe how under control I appear with my body language. Cause inside I was just a mess and, you know, not really understanding what was going on and trying to figure it out of like, what in the hell's happening right now. So, yeah, you're exactly right that you don't go back, or I didn't go back and revisit those, but to go back and go through it and just to know where I was to where I am now, I'm very proud of that.
Rick Ankiel is sitting down with us here on the Ryan Kelly Morning After, 590 The Fan, KFNS, and InsideSTL.com. So what was the cause, the impetus for you to go, you know what, I want to put this all out there. I'm going to write a book, or I'm going to work with. And who is the writer, by the way? Is Tim Brown.
Tim Brown. He's actually here. We should get him
is that
over
right?
on the radio.
Oh, that'd be super strong. Yeah, absolutely. Right? Tim Brown, who's a great baseball writer. He's actually the one who I recall the cat when Pujols decided to go to the Angels. He broke the story in the offseason after 2011. So he's a great baseball writer. So what did somebody approach you, or did you go, you know what, I want to tell my story? How'd it work?
You know, I got approached a lot, and I got approached even to make a movie when I was still playing, and I always just thought that was bad timing. I was still in uniform. I thought that would be not only a distraction to me, but to my teammates. It was just something that I didn't want. Once I was done playing, I had time to sit down and you know, think about what all this meant. You know, and some of it I was a little hesitant. I wasn't sure that I really wanted to go back and relive some of this, and not just me, but my family. You know, because they got to go back through it too. In talking with my agent, Scott Boris, and a few other people, just realizing that, hey, you know, you can really inspire people and help people. And you know, kind of as we talked about on how to get back up, or just getting back up and not letting life beat you down all the time. You know, once I realized that, I was like, yeah, you know what, I'm on board.
Yeah. And, you know, Joe Buck just did his book, and he said, you know, I was surprised he got into, at least beforehand, he told me he was going to get into his divorce and get into some personal things. And I go, man, from a legal standpoint, I don't know if you can do that. You never know what the terms are on those things and all that stuff. But he goes, if I was going to tell my story, I wasn't going to leave anything out. And it sounds like that's...
Yeah, yeah, exactly right. I thought it was important, too, to go back and, you know, one thing is to always try to understand what makes people tick, right? And if, I mean, you have to take a look at my entire story, because it is part of the story, and you talk about the background and all that, you know, all the personal stuff that I went through. So, you know, all that's in there. You know, that you'll just see lessons on how to get back up. I mean, I think that's the best way to put it.
That's the ultimate getting back up story. You told me something, and I think you were mad that I asked you about it, because we had talked about it before, but it's out there, and I know you want to. It's one of the good details in the book that I find amazing. So, they're bringing in a right-hander. So, So you had just said, that's it, I'm done, okay? You had announced to the Cardinals, I'm not going through this anymore, it's not working, I can't pitch anymore.
And this is spring training 05?
Spring training 05.
Okay, yeah. So he gets done with this, okay? And he feels like a weight has been lifted off his shoulder, now we can focus on what's next. He gets home, and he told me he was at peace with everything. And then he gets a call from his agent. Tell us, you know, what that was about and how that sort of changed the direction.
Yeah, so I'm getting, you know, obviously people checking in, are you okay, et cetera, and Scott Boris is checking in. And I think it's only been a few hours. You know, I'm still sitting on my couch kind of looking around like, all right, this feels kind of nice. I don't have to deal with, you know, everything that came with trying to throw strikes. And he's like, hey, are you ready to go play again? I'm like, what are you talking about? Is nobody listening to me? I just retired. I just stopped pitching. He's like, no, are you ready to go play? And I'm like, he's like, do you want to be an outfielder? And I'm like, man, timeout. You know, it just took me however long to get to this point. So long story short, I call him back. A few hours later, I call him back, say, hey, you know what? I'm on board. He's like, let me call the Cardinals and ask. Calls me back. He says, hey, Cardinals are on board. Walt Jocketty be calling you. Walt Jocketty calls me and says, hey, tomorrow you're an outfielder. We'll see you in the morning.
So when Boris's idea? Was the outfielder thing Boris's idea?
It was Boris's idea. So come to find out later,
Tim Brown, the writer, has sat down with us. Hi, Tim. I'm Tim.
Fellas,
that's Jim.
To
hello.
See you. Thank you.
Come to find out later, Scott Boris, Harvey Dorfman were already in talks with the Cardinals. They just didn't. They hadn't told me about it. So when he spun it to me, he was like, well, I'll call out Walt and ask. But come to find out years later, they were already on board.
So what's the feeling like? You walk away, the next day you're Rick Ankiel, the outfielder, and everyone's looking at you going, you can't do this. What's that feeling like walking in, getting dressed, going out there with all eyes on you, Rick Ankiel, the outfielder? What was that like?
Well, that part was fun because now it was challenging. Now I want to be a hitter, where when you just the day before, the year before, all eyes were on me for a different reason, right? Everybody's waiting for me to throw one off the backstop so they have a story to write about. So when that came, it was like, okay, hey, I'm having fun again. Here we go again. And, I mean, it was, you know, it was awesome.
And but, what was it like working with this guy?
It was great. And you know, I've covered baseball since 89, but there was a five-year period where I covered the NBA, and it happened to be during the time that Rick had his issues. It was like 2000 to 2005. So I missed that whole process, so watching it from afar. And when one of the things I was thinking about when you were asking about him making that transition, Harvey Dorfman, who was so instrumental in Rick's life, had felt all Rick thought Harvey was trying to save his baseball career. Harvey thought he was trying to save Rick's life. Not maybe even literally, but just in terms of who he was going to be when this thing ended. And I think everybody knew at some point it was going to end, and probably not pretty. And the day that the conversations between Scott and Harvey were about, look, Rick can't go be a hitter and have this top out in Double A and have him be a failure again. This is a young man, fragile at points. And if this were to fail in 2 years and he's hitting a .128 in Double A, Harvey's worried that he's not going to stand up under that. So everybody had to be sure. Scott had to be absolutely sure that Rick could come back and be a big leaguer. It was really important to Harvey that this end well, and obviously it did. So I thought those were the things I found most interesting about the book, seeing it from afar and then seeing it up close, so many curiosities for me. That was one of the things.
You know, and some of those details I didn't learn until we were going through the book
process. Oh, yeah? Right? Really?
So I didn't know those conversations between Scott and Harvey and Walt Jocketty, et cetera. So,
you know, Tim, one of the things that I thought while Rick was playing, I thought this is the kind of story that it's just a matter of somebody to tell properly. That's sometimes our job as reporters, hosts, whatever the case might be. The story's so good, we just don't want to F it up, you know? And that's one of these stories. And so the moment in August 2007 when Rick makes his return to the major leagues and he hits that home run against the Padres, they cut to the dugout, Fox Sports Midwest does, and Tony La Russa is smiling, which isn't something that's commonplace when Tony La Russa's in a dugout. I only saw him smile one other time in the dugout, matter of fact, all the way back from 96 through 2011 when he managed the Cardinals, and that was in the bottom of the ninth of Game 6 of the 2011 World Series, which is like baseball euphoria. But the only other time was when Rick hit that home run. That's how much it meant to Tony La Russa. Did you get a chance to talk to him throughout this process of putting this book together?
I did, and Tony puts that in his top three or four baseball moments ever.
Wow.
Because he was so close to what was going on there, so close to the failure every day. We go through the book nights when you know, Rick would just collapse into his office and say, I just can't do this. And Tony would send him home, go spend the night, think it over, come back to me in the morning, you know, when things look so bleak. And Rick would show up the next day, okay, let's go, let's do this. I'm going to stand up again and get after mm-hmm. this thing. So Tony lived through so much of it with him, and also Dave Duncan, the process, the everyday, the mornings out here, out behind the trees to try to get this thing together. They'd all done a lot of work in it. And on top of it, they had to live with this thing. You know, all of them had to live with this thing and wanted so desperately to see it end well. And then it did that night.
I always felt like, and I could be wrong on this, and Rick, you may know, Tim, you may know from talking with him, that Tony felt somewhat culpable for what transpired in October 2000. And that was part of it. Perhaps the current manager feels somewhat culpable because of the famous hunting knife incident, and he wasn't there to be the catcher that day. What did you learn from the process?
I think everybody wore a little piece of it. You know, I think Rick would let everybody off the hook at that point, at any point. But I do think everybody felt like, you know, was he ready to make that start against the Braves? Was Carlos Hernandez physically capable, comfortable enough with Rick to sit back there and know what was coming and have a sense of that? You know, the whole thing sort of balled up on everybody. And, yeah, Tony absolutely has regrets now about it.
You know, I think folks in St. Louis were aware of how good a hitter you were growing up and, you know, all throughout your career. But I would imagine for the Cardinals and for his management even to take a risk, not only risking the possibility it didn't work, but also as a franchise – seeming like you're giving something to someone, you have to be a pretty special athlete to get that opportunity, right?
I think that, you know, by all evidence, the high school, how he hit as a, you know, coming up through the minors, how he hit as a starting pitcher. The very first time I ever saw Rick live, I'd come to St. Louis in his rookie year to do a piece on Jim Edmonds out from L.A. Jim Edmonds is out. And I just happened to be sitting in the press box on this cold, dank night. I believe it was the Brewers in town. And Rick happens to be pitching. I'm not even there to look at Rick. And he's pitching. He comes up. And on this cold, dark April night, Rick hits an opposite field home run. The pitcher comes up and hits an opposite field home run. Like, holy cow, what is this? I think that just the athletic ability. I mean, you give away an awful lot of those formative at-bats from 18 to 25, right?
Right.
You know, when you're becoming a big league pitcher, trying to stay a big league pitcher. And I think that cost him in the long run. But the natural ability was unmistakable.
What's your gauge on the excitement level? Because obviously in St. Louis, everyone is really looking forward to this thing coming out. Just around the rest of the country, I'm sure there's a lot of people familiar with what Rick accomplished.
I think people are really fired up about it because I do think there's a lot of the story that was left untold. Obviously, Rick didn't want to tell and retell the story and let people in. There were walls built so he could try to beat this thing. And then once you become an outfielder, that's in the past. That's gone. The minute by minute, the day by day, the month by month has never really been told. And so I think people are really curious about, A, what happened? B, how'd you try to whip it? C, who are you now?
Yeah, I've always felt like this is a movie or 30 for 30 waiting to happen. A movie would, of course, be more beneficial if that were to actually happen. And the moment you hit that home run against the Padres, I'm like, there it is. There's the happy ending. But in order to get from spring training 05 to August 07, the thing, you did the show with Jim Edmonds and I a couple years ago, and Edmonds was talking, and when he told it from this perspective, then it drove it home even more. You go from being a major league ball player at, 19, right, Rick?
Mm-hmm.
And you're pitching in the playoffs in 2000, 21 years old, and then 5 years later, you go through all that hell. But there's not just that part, the public part, but then now you're riding on buses, making no money, driving around the middle of nowhere, and staying in crappy hotels. I mean, it's like being a child star, essentially, in Hollywood, and then having it ripped out from you in a very public way, and the only way back is to go through this crap that you thought was, 7 years removed from. How difficult was it to go back to that and know that that was your only way out?
It was tough, but I didn't even look at it like that. I looked at it, I was so focused on making it back to the big leagues that I really just tried to focus only on my game and how to make my game better. I didn't pay attention to the bus rides or the hotels or the food's not as good, because to me that was just a distraction. If I let myself get distracted by the fact that I'm not in a 4-star, 5-star hotel, right, because I'm not in the big leagues, then I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing.
Were you consumed? Was it something that consumed you to get back to the big leagues?
We could call it pretty close to being consumed. Really? Yeah, I would call it laser focus. I had a plan and I stuck to it. I got up every day. I did my workouts, everything that I could possibly do, extra work, all of it and the above, and just tried to stay on course.
You obviously had to have a lot of support. How do you get through that when you are trying to reinvent yourself as really no one had done before?
Because of all the scrutiny and everything that I had taken already as part of the pitching process, when I turned over to be a hitter, it was I don't want to say easy, definitely easier to understand. And as he said, I built walls. I kind of just pushed the people that I didn't want away. I wouldn't let you in, and kept my little support team, and just off I went.
When you were going south as a pitcher, there were a lot of people rooting for you. But when you go through something like that, do you kind of feel like there is a percentage of the folks out there, like you said, kind of hoping you throw one off the backstop? I mean, is that in your mind?
I think there's, that's human nature, right? You're going to have people that support you. You're going to have people that want to laugh at you. I mean, it is what it is, right? You have the contrast of both. And I think at times, even though I had Harvey with me and I know the organization was behind me and my wife, you're really all alone. You're all by yourself. You go out on the mound, you're all by yourself. You go home at night, you're all by yourself. I think that's probably the most difficult thing, is really when you feel like you're all by yourself. It does take a support group, the right people around you to keep you going and help you stay focused.
Rick Ankiel, Tim Brown sitting down with us here. You're listening to 590 The Fan KFNS. You mentioned externally when you watched the video of the playoff game against the Braves and perhaps the playoff game against the Mets, you were amazed by how calm you appeared outwardly, but you said you were a mess inside. Had that ever happened to you, high school and minors?
No.
Anything that never happened?
No, there was no warning signs. It was, you know, basically it's like here I am just, you know, a few years removed from being the number one high school player in the year. I won the Gatorade Award to, you know, everything I had ever dreamed of to, in my mind, I wanted to be the best pitcher that ever played, and everything's unfolding the way it should, and all of a sudden it's just taken away from you. I had no idea what happened. You know, and even if you go back and look at that interview and some of the things I said after the game where I kind of joke about it, and I'm like, oh, it's a mechanical issue, because I really didn't even understand what was happening. You know, it just and I think that's another part of the hardest part of this is that, you know, even today, in 2017, we can go talk to as many psychologists as we want, and everybody still really doesn't know what it is. And that's the hardest thing about it, right? If you have you hear guys talk about a physical injury, whether it's an elbow or a shoulder, right. And they talk about how hard the grind is to make it back, and they can go talk to people like, oh, I've had that injury, and I made it back, you'll be fine, just stay with it. But now when you all of a sudden have this mental injury, we'll call it, and you just feel like you're trapped in a mental prison because it consumes you. The thought never leaves you, right? No matter what I'm doing, it always pops back up like, man, can I throw a strike today? Am I going to be able to throw a strike tomorrow? What can I do to get it right? Or I'll go throw another 50 balls off the wall behind my house. And there's nobody that can say, oh, hey, I had that once and I made it through. You'll be fine. Just keep grinding.
Right.
It doesn't work that way.
Right.
And that's the hardest part about it.
I had what was called Steve Sachs disease. Recall that, Tim? And Knobloch had it as well, right? And if it was an easy ground ball hit to me, it was going over the first baseman's head. If I had dive, had no time to think about it, perfect throw. And so as I saw this play out, I was thinking to myself, my God, I wonder if this is what's going to happen again. But if I'm not mistaken, you have what happens against the Braves and the Mets in the playoffs, but then you come back and open up the season against the Diamondbacks in 2001, and you have like a sick start, right?
I did. Yeah.
What the hell happened?
Yeah, what happened? Yeah.
Did I hit on something?
No, I don't want to give too many details away from the book.
I have heard something about that start, but I don't know if it's accurate, and I'm sure as hell not going to say it.
Should I say it now or wait for the book?
No, go.
You're
ahead.
The writer. It's up to you. No,
you know, no one's listening. It's a crummy.
Yeah, exactly.
You know that
this
by
is,
listening.
This is, you're essentially in the witness protection program right now,
no.
Tim. So you're fine.
So before that game,
you found a way not to be on the mound alone.
Well, that's true. So you know? Before the game, I'm scared to death. Right? I know I have no chance. I mean, just the day before, it was like I'm one day I'm okay, one day I'm not. Right? So. Feeling the pressure of all that, right before the game, I got a ball of vodka. just started drinking vodka, and lo and behold, it kind of tamed the monster, and I was able to do what I wanted. And I'm sitting on the bench, feeling kind of crazy, like, oh, this is crazy. I got to drink vodka to just try to pitch through this, and it worked for that game. So
wow. So that happens. Had you ever drank before a start before?
No.
I would imagine once you have that great start in Arizona. And that's the 2001 World Champion Diamondback,
yep.
So it's not like it's
yep.
just some group of sack asses out there.
Randy Johnson, the opposing.
Yep. Oh, is it Johnson you were up
against? Randy Johnson.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
About that.
You know, it's one of those things where you just feel like the yips, the monster, this disease. It didn't fight fair. So I felt like, well, you know what? I'm not going to fight fair either.
So I imagine
one of the things that I found interesting about it when we talked about it, it's one thing to pitch drunk. It's another thing to stand in the box left-handed against Randy Johnson.
Yeah, how'd that treat you? How many balls were you seeing, Rick?
Really, let's talk about what's the scarier part here.
But you must realize that's not a sustainable, thing,
you
right?
You know, and that's exactly what happened. And
so did you drink before your next start?
I did, of course.
Yeah,
Because, hey, I just threw strikes, and let's be honest, So, but,
then what happened on the next
start? That's part of it that the monster is so powerful that it can overcome anything, and it just started to overcome it, and I could feel it. And Harvey Dorfman was like, I understand you're surviving, but I'm telling you it's not real, and it's probably not going to last.
So you drink before the next start after the Diamondback start, and what winds up happening?
I just started throwing balls again.
Really?
The anxiety, the pressure, it overcame the alcohol, and then I knew, like, okay, I got to it doesn't matter. I got to do this the right way.
Yeah.
There's no way around it, So.
And then back to the minors, you went injuries and all that took place. And I'll tell you something, and Tim is covering the game as you do. the Cardinals, I think you could put it up against any organization since 2000, you know, 99 when you came up, but 2000 and the run the Cardinals have had of successful seasons. I think if you asked Cardinal fans, really hardcore Cardinal fans, their top five moments over the last 16 seasons, many would cite not the home run, although many would cite that, of course, Freeze in Game 6, Pujols against Lidge and all of that stuff, but they would cite your throws at Coors Field. Defensive assists would be cited as two of the favorite moments in that run because of A, what it meant, but B, I don't know if anybody's ever seen anybody do that before. I mean, that was it. Was well, your teammates,
no, Troy
Gloss, who wasn't easily excitable.
Like, well, he didn't have a pulse.
he actually gave a fist bump. Yeah, got
exactly.
That,
you got
that.
Yeah, that was the phenomenon, Rick. Got the throw.
Yeah, we've talked about that before. I said, hey, thanks for giving me a little bit of excitement there.
I was there, and you saw that, and was like unlike anything you had seen. You couldn't believe what you saw with those throws.
And I imagine you're just grabbing the ball and just gunning it. No thought process.
No thought process. I mean, and I've told this story before on the first one with Willie Tavares at second, and there was a runner at first with one out. You know, the throw is you're supposed to throw it to second. But when I was backing up on the ball, I just had this feeling like I got him. Like, I got it. You know, it's just one of those instincts. But after the game, Tony La Russa came up and said, hey, Hank, that was a great throw, but don't ever effing do it again.
Tim, in your experience of writing and telling this story, how does this one rank? I mean, from my standpoint, this has to be – it's an outlier. It's as much of an outlier as it gets in the game.
I think it's one of the real undertold stories in the game. I think it's underappreciated. And you know, I don't live in St. Louis. I'm sure it's told and appreciated in St. Louis. But I think across the game, I think that I think for in large part Rick made it look so easy that I think people underestimate how hard it was and they underappreciate what that looks like. Nobody's ever done that before, not like that. Yeah. Nobody. I mean, it's a unique story, and I think in the retelling of it, people might come to appreciate it more.
You're going to win an Academy Award for what's going to wind up being an adapted screenplay. That's my belief, Tim.
You. I thought you were going to say because I'm going to play Rick in the movie.
Well, maybe that might be odd. It might hurt the chances of the film.
Wait,
but
you see my left-handed
throw. Maybe you got sick stuff, man. I didn't know.
In all honesty, there was like a fake Rick Ankiel movie put out.
There was.
And it seemed like it was hastily put together.
I think know
it
was this. Called there the, was it
the
like a
Phenom
Lifetime
or the Phenomenon. And it was supposedly sort of loosely based on Rick without all the nuances.
Well, yeah, I didn't watch it, but I had a friend watch it, but I think he's even an A-ball in Port St. Lucie.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, thankfully it didn't do well because...
We'll do the story from here. We'll take it from here.
I actually opened the movie app one day. I was looking for an animated movie to take my kids to, and I seen it. I clicked on it. I'm going, what? I immediately called my agent, my lawyer. I'm like, somebody get on this. What's going on right now?
Well, we can't wait for the book to come out.
I can't wait for the book to come out.
And then the movie. And I'm assuming that we'll have small roles, Tim.
We'll
make sure that happens. We'll play a couple of reporters.
It'd be tough to find short, bald dudes to find. To cover. If you got on the mound right now, what would you do?
As in,
would you be able to just fire in a strike arc right now?
Yeah,
go ahead.
That'd be pretty close.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And then would there be, what about that snap? I mean, that thing.
The curveball's always there.
Yeah.
But saying that, hey, I came back and pitched in 2004.
I know.
So,
yeah.
And a lot of people don't know that either.
That does seem to fly under the radar, but you did. Yeah. 2004, one of the greatest Cardinal teams of all time in 2014. Yeah, so I mean, it's amazing. How are you feeling these days? What are you doing these days?
I feel good. Well, we're focusing on the book right now.
Yep.
I do some
work April 18th is the book date.
Yep. Do some work with Fox Midwest, the pre and post.
How are you liking working with the cat? That's got to be a pain in the ass.
I only had one game with the cat.
Really?
He's
that's
like
nice.
In and out,
that must have been
know?
In your negotiations. Boris again coming through.
I'm usually on the road. He's usually in the studio.
Yeah, exactly. So no, it's fun. I like it. You know, it keeps you involved and. It's always nice to learn a new trade.
And you're living right here, correct?
I'm here in Jupiter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Love it down here.
Yeah.
Fish,
being a dad.
Being a dad, that takes up the majority of my time.
And your sons, two sons?
Two sons, 4 and 6.
4 and 6.
So we're in T-ball, soccer, those, all that stuff.
What kind of, how much coaching do you give them? Are you heavy-handed with them or you
no,
just let them have fun?
I just let them have fun.
God bless
I
you.
Let them go.
God bless
you.
Rick Ankiel, Tim Brown, our guests. Guys, thank you so much for sitting down with us. Really, really enjoyed it.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thank you. There he is, Rick Ankiel, Tim Brown. The book comes out on April 18th. I cannot wait to read this thing. It is going to be outstanding. and it comes out on April 18th. Tim McKernan, Jimmy the Cat Hayes with you. We'll take a commercial break. Come back with more. It's the Ryan Kelly Morning After, live from Cardinal Spring Training in Jupiter, Florida.